Kip, Quitting Pornography, Part 1. Starting at the age of 10, Kip found himself ensnared by pornography. After struggling for 15 years, Kip finally found the resources to help him quit thanks to the church's 12-step program. This is his story.
Hey, Kip.
There we go, sir.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Jay?
Good, good. I'm excited to do this this episode with you today.
Super excited to do it.
Thanks for coming on. By the way, you should probably put your phone on Do Not Disturb because a call might interrupt that signal.
I just did. I saw that you did it. I was like, okay, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So let's just dive right into it. Today's episode is going to be about porn addiction and, you know, how to overcome it. So before we get started, tell us a little bit about yourself, Kip.
Oh, Jay, I mean, you go way back. Born and raised in Fillmore, Utah, if you know where that is. And, you know, I'm sorry. And chances are you got pulled over there because of fabulous small town. it's great. I was born into a family of five sons. I had great parents, fantastic parents. I'm the youngest.
Yeah. How old are you?
I'm 28 now. The next closest to me is about 7 years older.
Wow.
And the oldest is 17 years older.
Wow.
You think that's basically being raised as an only child, but no, it wasn't.
Yeah. Sounds like you're an accident.
I was. But, you know, some of the best things in this world are surprises. So. At least that's what I tell myself to keep me going.
Yeah, I don't know how good of a surprise is when your oldest kid's out of the house and you just got pregnant again.
They called my my dad. They told my dad that I was the last twinkle in an old man's eye.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, are you in your LDS, right?
I am. Yes.
Did you serve a mission?
I did. My mission is just different from most people's, though.
Okay.
I served a trial mission in Salt Lake City, which is a mission to determine whether or not I'm able to actually do it. And I was born with a club foot. People are going to be like wondering what that is, but the best way to describe it is my foot was born crooked, like the tendons and everything was born misshaped, bending inward, and they corrected it when I was a baby.
Wow.
I lost the ability to walk at 18, so. And surgeries and such, so they were worried about my mission.
Okay, but you can walk now, though, right?
Oh yeah, I live in chronic pain now. But
okay, well, maybe that'll be a good topic to dive into.
Yeah,
as well, or try to correlate this. So,
oh, it will correlate, I promise.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm trying to do an episode where we talk about how to overcome pornography.
Yeah.
So. At what age did you start viewing pornography?
Viewing and exposed are two different ages.
Okay. How old were you when you were first exposed?
I was in first grade when I was first exposed to pornography.
How that was it at home or?
No, I was at school.
Really?
No.
Little perverts, huh?
Some kids brought it to school and they showed me, and I remember taking it and ripping it up and running as fast as I could because I knew it would get the crap kicked out of me.
Wow. And then, did that stick with you as a little kid?
Like, it did.
Yeah.
It did stick with me.
Okay. And then when did you actually start viewing it?
Probably 10.
10 years old?
Yeah. I think I just barely started to hit puberty. And 10 years old kind of hit.
How do you even access that as a 10-year-old?
Oh, computer, friends. you find a way. No, it wasn't really as much as, you know, internet back then. It was more of, you know, pictures or late night TV.
Okay. And then, I mean, when you viewed it, did you do anything with it, or were you kind of just, I don't know, just intrigued by it?
Oh, it was definitely masturbation was definitely part of it.
Really?
I'm pretty sure that started it, and then, you know, doing it by yourself just didn't have the same lackluster, I guess, back then. So you would switch to pornography to help with it. But
at 10 years old.
10 years old is when it started.
That's crazy to me.
I know, right? I knew it was going to be as this good kid, Jay. Come on.
Yeah, so at 10 years old, you're looking at pornography. And I don't even know how a child that young even knows how to masturbate. I mean, I didn't hear about that till I was in middle school. And even then, I didn't dare experiment till I was a little bit, you know, older. That's crazy. So,
not the best.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I didn't really have much of a reason to do so either. Like, I didn't have really any stress then. Right. I mean, I was bullied in elementary school, middle school, but that was normal.
Yeah. But that's interesting. So, you know, I know in the LDS culture, a lot of times you're in scouts and.
Yeah.
I guess they don't do scouts anymore, but you're in scouts.
We did do scouts back then. So, yeah.
So you're in scouts and, you know, you do these temple trips and stuff. I mean, is that something that. Did they talk? I mean, I don't know much about growing up LDS because I didn't grow up LDS, but
no,
did they talk about that like in scouts and stuff? Like, hey, kids, don't look at porn, or how did that?
To a degree, yeah, they did. I mean, you always couldn't do it bad. You knew you weren't supposed to do it. You knew you weren't supposed to masturbate. You knew you weren't supposed to, you know,
yeah,
whatever it was, pills, drugs, whatever your vice was back in the day. You knew you weren't supposed to. But you still,
and you never talked about it with like your.
I didn't. No, I'm pretty sure my dad caught me a few times. I denied it, of course, back then. And
yeah,
even my brothers have caught me too.
Really? Then
now then it's a big joke because it's like,
yeah,
doing this. I'm like, I was just a kid. Go, okay, come on.
Yeah, that's that's interesting. So,
continue. Go, Jay.
So, at what point did you decide that it was a problem?
Oh, I guess I kind of always knew it was a problem when I hit high school. It started viewing it for not the, you know, just the release portion. You know, a lot of people can actually view pornography and be fine. Like, but for me, it wasn't. I didn't do it for the pleasure of it. I used it for the escape. I didn't want to deal with the circumstances that were around me, particularly when I started high school. My dad got sick.
Uh huh.
And the stress of that was, you know, the stress of him having kidney failure and heart failure. It was like, I don't want to deal with this. And the unique thing about pornography is it's a drug that will activate all five pleasure sensors in your brain. So you literally will not think about anything else when you start it.
That's
but just like any other drug, you have to get more of it to get that same high that first time.
So you're in high school when your dad was sick. So as he got sicker, did your usage go up then?
Yes. It was almost every day. It was almost every freaking day. Multiple times a day.
So really?
Yeah. It got bad. It got really bad back in high school, and honestly, I didn't know how to process my emotions because, you know, senior year my dad ended up dying, and it was easily one of the hardest things that I've ever gone through.
Well, I can imagine, especially when you're
you knew my dad, you know.
Yeah, that's at that age where you're at that age where, you know, your parents are still like your hero.
He still is. I would say 28 years later, he's still
there. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So, I mean, at what point then did you try to seek help?
Oh man. So think about it. Like, I wouldn't say I really tried to seek help until probably a year ago, man.
Really?
We're looking at like 2 years ago.
So when you're 26.
26, yeah.
So you've been masturbating, looking at porn from age 10 to age 26.
Yep.
So, and that's crazy. To me, that's
on
crazy.
And off, not all the time. You know,
Yeah.
It was completely dependent on the circumstances I was in.
So, like, what about going for on a mission? How were you able to prepare for that? Did you not tell them that you were addicted to porn?
Oh, I did it. No. Well, at that time, too, I didn't think I was addicted to porn. You know, I kept just in denial about it because I was just like, oh, I just do this, but I can stop. We can stop anytime. You know, that was the mindset.
Did you tell them, though? Did you tell your...
No, I didn't. I didn't tell
really?
No.
You know, and I just want to bring this point up. What's interesting to me is that there are people out there, and I feel like people that grew up in the church have a way better time of just like kind of because they've been in the church so long, they don't feel like they got to tell everything, right?
Whereas yeah.
convert yeah. to a convert, you know, he's taught like, oh, this is bad. He should tell the bishop about it. So it's kind of interesting, but that's just a tangent there. So,
I agree with you though. The thing is, like, I should have told him, and not for the pure sake of just telling, you know, your religious leader, but like for the support.
Yeah.
I bare knuckled this crap, but that was stupid of me.
Well, so what about when you were on your mission, did you cave into that?
No, not at all. I was fine.
Really?
Granted, I was only out for 2.5 months, but
no. So how would your porn usage go? Was it like was it in cycles? I mean, you said it depended on what's going on in your life, but
I had a relationship, I wasn't doing that. I think it's because I had someone else to focus on. But I mean, what came with my dad dying was, you know, severe clinical depression and anxiety and all that fun stuff started really rearing its head. Then I got to college. College hit hard. I ended up dating a girl and ended up like really, really messing up with her. And it was just toxic both ways. I'm the first to admit that I was not the best person when it comes to that relationship particularly.
Well, okay. And by mess up, you probably mean like, yeah.
I had sex. Well, let's just go with that. Sorry.
Yeah, okay.
I don't care. I can say it.
Right. So you had sex. But, I mean, it's interesting, though, because some people would just see that as normal, right? I mean, it's normal.
Most people, yeah, would see that as normal.
Yeah, but yeah.
It's weird, right? It's weird being raised in the church because at first I thought when it first happened, I thought that, holy crap, this is going to be like, I shouldn't have done that. But I didn't feel guilt, right?
Right. You felt good, right? Because it's like you finally get to do what you see people doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't honestly think about that. I was thinking more of like it's kind of we're wired that way, right? We're wired to want that. We're wired to do it.
Yeah.
So I didn't understand where the guilt was. I didn't have it for a good 7 months of this relationship until she stopped talking to me completely. Like, she just one day cut me out. And she didn't talk to me for a solid month.
And was that just because of your relationship, or did it have to do with the porn usage?
Yeah, well, I didn't really look at porn at all with her.
Yeah, okay.
That was just relationship probably. But that's when I started feeling the guilt of all of it. The sex, the pornography, all of it. I started feeling it.
Okay, so at this point then, I mean, did it become like this cycle that just kept, like, once you felt guilt, you masturbate, feel guilt, masturbate to get rid of that guilt? Or
yeah, I attempt to not think about it, yeah.
Huh.
That's what you would do. It just endless cycle, and it, you know, continued. I was 21 at the time. Now I'm, you know, 28, so the next 5 years... It was just a vicious cycle of like, I don't want to feel this guilt. Well, you do this, you won't feel the guilt right at the moment, in a moment, right?
Yeah. So was there like periods where you'd stop outside of your dating the girl? I mean, how long, like what was the longest you went without doing it?
Maybe a couple months. Maybe.
Maybe. Okay.
If that, maybe a month. In that 21 to 20, you know, six when I actually really started, it was maybe 2 months, 2-3 months that I'd made it.
And how would you feel in like about your self esteem? Because I know in the LDS church, yeah,
freaking awful. Yeah, it was terrible. I have any self esteem? I didn't have any self confidence? I didn't have any of it?
Okay. Do you think that had more to do with the fact that the church you know, it labels people that viewpoint as bad, or do you think it just had to do with the fact that you're uncontrolled?
I think it was more uncontrolled for me. I didn't really care as much about what people church thought of me. It was more what I thought of myself.
Mm.
And it was, you don't have any self-control. And, you know, when you get in that self-cycle, self-deprecation, it just keeps going. And, like, you, it's an easy thing to feed, and you just keep going every day. Plus, on top of that, I was dealing with chronic pain. I have been still. And I would, it's just bad, man. Just bad. When I didn't want to feel pain, I would turn to, you know, the pornography to, like, numb it for a second. And, you know, a lot of the time it worked.
Huh.
And then my older brother, the closest to me, sat me down one day and like very seriously said, "Hey, I know you're depressed." And he caught me at the perfect moment.
Okay.
There wouldn't have been another moment that wouldn't have been there.
And he just had a heart to heart with you?
Yeah, he's like, I think you should talk to somebody. I think you should see a therapist. And that was when I was probably 20, 25 and a half. I was almost 26. And I agreed.
And, like, let's talk. Before we go into that, though, I'm curious, though. So with your, I mean, because, yeah, it does sound like an addiction. But I feel like by a worldly standard, it still might not be an addiction. Because I feel like probably most men in the world look at porn. So often.
We got to define addiction, right?
Yeah. So what would you say? Like, was it a legit addiction, or were you just feeling crappy about yourself because you were taught your whole life to feel crappy?
It's a legit addiction.
Yeah, you couldn't like what you.
Oh no, I couldn't function. No, I couldn't function outside of it.
Just thinking.
If I didn't do it, I didn't function.
So, like going to work, you think you'd be thinking about it?
Oh, I would have to do it before I even go to work, just to be able to
focus.
Focus.
Okay, and then what about like? What do you mean by not function then? If you're able to go to work.
If I didn't do it and go to work, I'd be irritable. I'd be just angry. It would be awful. Like it would be the most miserable experience for me.
Mm.
So there's a good healthy difference between, you know, porn addiction and people dealing with addiction. A true porn addict looks at women as objects, right? Or looks at the opposite of sex or what he's attracted to, what she's attracted to, what they're attracted to, as an object to satisfy them.
That's
pornography addiction.
Hmm.
The addiction for me was my drug of choice, and what addicts would say. My drug of choice was that. It was used that to escape because I didn't want to deal.
What about, like, you know, you hear stories of Ted Bundy and Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, they start getting into crazier and crazier.
It's a cycle, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Did that happen with you? Did you, like, kind of start with soft and then...
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
Soft, it got rougher and it got rougher and it got rougher. And finally, you know, even through therapy, I was still struggling with it. And I refused to at first to admit it to my therapist.
Huh.
Which I now see is just like, you look back at it now, it's like, that's the stupidest thing ever.
Yeah. That's
just stupid.
And why do you think that was, though? Was it just you're still in denial? Or
still in denial. Yeah, really? It was literally denial.
So at what point then, because I'm sure, you know,
people
that are going to be listening to this, I'm sure some of them have gone through that, you know, where they tell themselves, well, it's not a big deal. At what point then would you say, like, okay, now it's necessary to tell somebody that I have an issue?
So this, it happened. I still remember the day it happened. It was March 10th, like 2021. And we were going over to a movie night, me and my roommates, at our friend's house.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just messed up. But this time it was different, right? Like, I had just viewed and masturbated, and I did not feel any better. I didn't feel good through it. It didn't feel good at all. In fact, I felt worse. Which I couldn't wrap my head around it. I was just sitting there like, why is this? Why? And we get there, and I'm sitting there, and I was like, I can't do this. And like, that's, you know, for me, that's when you know, I actually started feeling the spirit for myself. It's kind of like, hey, talk to somebody, call them. And I couldn't sit there and enjoy the movie with them. I couldn't pretend to.
Mm.
I had to put on that face of like, I'm this guy who has his shit together.
And what? Yeah, go on.
Okay. Well, I didn't. So I went out of the apartment, and I remember calling my brother. I called two of my brothers. I called the first one, and I said, I have a problem.
Was that the one that had the heart-to-heart with you?
No, this is the middle one.
Okay.
The middle one, I believe, has been on your podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I called him, and he was the first person I told. He said, hey, I am struggling. And I was bawling my eyes out to him. I can't do this. I need help. I can't do this alone anymore. And that's when he suggested I should look at the 12 steps. And of course, my initial reaction to that was, I don't need to do that.
So let me ask you this. So
yeah,
you didn't have this revelation that you screwed up till you saw a therapist. So you start seeing a therapist, right?
About a year after seeing a therapist, like, okay. It's still.
So the reason I bring this up is because I think sometimes, and this is just a thought, right? But
yeah,
I feel like unless we take some kind of step to want to change, we're never gonna have the. I mean, we might, but once we take one step to change a little bit, I feel like then we open ourselves up to have that.
Yeah.
That moment, right?
Yeah.
I really am screwing up.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can't change unless you want to.
And you wanted to change at that point, right?
Yeah.
And that's what led you to have that moment. Yes.
And you know, there have been moments of clarity, you know, in the years prior.
Yeah.
You know, you get moments where like, I really should do something about this. But they didn't last long. And if I didn't take the opportunity to do it, I would just fall back into the cycle. But this time it was just so low. I'd hit so low rock bottom, and I felt worse than I'd ever felt.
And why do you think it was this time? I mean, when you were having those mental clarity, were you not trying as hard?
I definitely wasn't trying as hard.
Okay.
It sucked, but it didn't suck like this. There's like a difference between depression and despair. This was despair.
Hmm.
This was like, this is like nothing I've ever felt in my life. It was awful.
So that's finally the step that made you call your siblings and do that. So did you end up going to 12 step right away, or how did that work out? Like, what was your next move?
I did. First off, I went home after that night, and I put a calendar on the fridge.
Okay.
And I told my roommates, and like I told them what was going on, my problem was, and I said, 30 days. I'm going to make 30 days. I need your help. And I'm going to be irritable. I'm going to be, because I knew the withdrawals of pornography, and I knew what they were going to come, and I knew it was going to be awful. So it was always a matter of, you know, having that tight-knit group of friends that I do have now. Being like, hey, I need to do something. Like, I can't be alone at this moment.
And were they supportive?
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. They're like, and half the time I'd go out to the front room and one of my roommates, either one of them, I'd be like, hey, can we do something? Like, I really want to use right now. Can we do something that just, and they'd be like, yeah, sure. I'll go get food. I want to go, you know, go play a game, go anywhere. And we would.
That's good. And how'd it go? Did you make it the first 30 days?
I did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I made it the first 30 days. I made the first 60 days. I made the first 90 days.
And that
way I started going to 12 steps, right? The church's 12 steps.
Was that after you started the 30 days or the same time?
About the same time. About 2 weeks into the 30 days is when I was finally like, I need to go do this. I need to do this. And like I had been to NA meetings, AA meetings before, and everything like that, with you know, siblings and such, and other people just being support. never for myself. So my 12-step meeting started over Zoom because it was still coming out of the COVID era of, you know, not meeting in person yet.
Yeah.
And there was only three of us, man. And like nobody would turn on their microphone, nobody would turn on their pictures or anything. And I remember being like, I remember words of my brother coming out very strong, which was the opposite of addiction is connection. How am I going to connect with people if I can't see their faces? So I was like, okay, I'm turning on my camera. And, you know, week by week, more people turn on their cameras.
This was over Zoom, though.
Yep. And then we finally started meeting in person.
What was this? Because was this during COVID?
Yeah, it was like the end of 2021.
Oh, okay.
Or no, the beginning of 2021. So, yeah, it was just starting to go, man, it's been.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. It's been a ride.
Yeah. So you start doing this. And what do you think at this point is helping you more? Is it your willpower or is it the 12-step program?
12-step program.
What in particular do you think is the most helpful?
So when I started, the first step is honesty, right?
Yeah.
So when I first started it, I didn't know what to do with myself, right? I didn't, like, I saw these steps and I said, I no clue that, okay, I just do these steps and I'll be okay. And, but I didn't know how to do it by myself. So that's when my brother reached out to me and said, I should find a mentor. Someone who, you know, has done the steps who could help me do it myself. That's what I did. I found one. And with him, I went through them. And let me tell you, like, some of those days were so freaking hard, Jay. It's like, some days it was just rough. Some days, like, my mentor would call me out on all my shit.
Like what? Like what do you mean?
Like, something bad would happen to me on day and I would start complaining about it, I would expect someone to do something, right? Like, yeah. I had an expectation put on them that they didn't know about. And then they failed that expectation. Is that right of them? Should I be mad at them? No, of course not. First of all, they didn't even know an expectation was put on them.
Like, what do you mean? Like, give us an example.
I'll give you an example. Good example here is I really like this girl. Like, we were hanging out every night, right?
Yeah.
And nothing had happened yet, and it had been about 2 months, and I was thinking, like, she actually really liked me. So I had this expectation of, like, okay, well, we should get more serious.
Yeah.
But then, you know, she brought another guy to my house on a movie night.
Oof.
See? And I have this expectation of, like, wait, what? What's going on?
Yeah.
And I'm getting upset, but it's not her fault. Right?
Yeah.
Even if that expectation was there, it's not there anymore. It's not her fault. I'm the one who said it.
I mean, did you tell this girl that you should be more serious, or you just thought it?
No, I tried asking her out before, way before it happened. But no, I didn't really talk about it, to be honest. No.
So then your mentor was like, yeah, you're being an idiot.
Yeah, yeah.
Why? Because what would you use that as an excuse to, like, look at porn?
So, you know, the reason why I would look at porn in the first place was it's all based in trauma.
Yeah.
Trauma of my life. And I would do it to not have to deal with said trauma. So if I get mad, so, you know, anger is a secondary emotion. So the primary emotion of anger is fear. And doing the 12 steps, you learn what your fears are and you learn what your resentments are. And those things can kill. Those things will freaking destroy you. So if I have a fear of, I had a fear of, you know, being alone.
Yeah.
Very good fear. What's the absolute realization of being alone is, you know, I'm alone. And it's okay to be alone. The fear of not having enough money, right? The fear of, there's tons of them. There's tons of them. But I worked through these fears and these resentments with my mentor to kind of get the understanding of, like, these are my weaknesses. that if I give into that fear, or if I give into that resentment towards somebody, I'm going to go and use to not deal with that resentment or that fear. So basically, I'm drinking poison, expecting it to kill them and not me.
Hmm.
You can't do it, right? It doesn't make any sense.
And so would you then relapse? Or would you call him and he'd help you and guide you
through it? I'd call him. Yeah. I had to call him every day. Every day. That was a non-negotiable thing that I did. I had to call him every single day.
Even if, like...
I had to call him before. If I wanted to use, I had to call him. If I wanted to, yeah, I'd call.
What if you didn't want to use? Would you still call him?
Yep, I'd still call him.
Okay.
If I didn't call him, he'd get mad at me.
So how long did this last? I mean, was there, since the first 30 days that you started, was there, and you said you went 60 and then 90, was there a time that you broke
in between that? There was a time I broke.
And how long did you last before you broke?
So I lasted 21 months.
21 months, okay.
21 months. I missed it. Oh my gosh, I got quite far. I finished my steps in that 21 months. Like I worked my steps, and I sponsor now myself, and I help people.
Yeah.
I mentor now and help people go through the steps. And my group, I have the best dang group in the world, man. My 12 steps group. I'm the facilitator of it. And we went from 3 people to 30 people.
Wow.
In Provo County, in Utah County.
So you help a lot of people.
I like it. It's great.
So what do you do when, I mean, so I want to walk through the emotions of that, you know?
Yeah.
So let's say, you know, you've gone 6 months. I think if anybody, right, like if I started working out every day for at the end of 6 months, like 6 months, I would feel like I'm David Goggins, you know? I would say, dude, I've got this shit down. I am the most, you know. I am a gym person. This is who I am, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming you hit that point, right, where you were like, "Dude, I broke free from my addiction." Did like maybe within 6 months?
See, that's the killer, right there. 3 months. It's the killer of it, because people, I've gotten to that point before, right? Where it's like, "Yeah, I did good. Like, I did really good," and then I mess up, and you'd be like, "Why did that happen?" Because the fear of success is just as bad as the fear of failure for me. I have to do one day at a time. I have to do take 24 hours at a time. Sometimes I have to do 10 minutes at a time, Jay.
Hmm.
I have to live in the moment. I have to be present. Because if I'm not, that's when it gets rocky.
So, but did you ever feel that, though? That you were like, you had overcome the addiction?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And really? Then I had to hurry and reel myself back in really quick. So it's like, yeah, I'm doing great. Okay, we know where this goes. Let's reel back in. We're doing good today.
So what would you think then, like what would you say is the part of 12 steps that helped you the most?
The part of it, man.
Yeah, because so here's what I'm trying to get at. There's people that think, you know, you don't need God in your life to quit pornography. You can do it through self-will. You can do it through different, you know, different methods. Why in 12 steps, if I get it right, 12 steps, the first step is what? Be honest with yourself.
It's honesty, yeah. And I can go through them real quick if you want.
Yeah. What are the 12 steps?
Got you, sir. Let's see here. 12 steps. Step one is honesty. Step two is hope. Step three is trust in God.
Okay.
Step four is truth. Step five is confession. Step six is change of heart. Step seven is humility. Step eight is seeking forgiveness. Step nine is restitution or reconciliation. Step 10 is daily accountability. Step 11 is personal revelation. And step 12 is service.
Okay. Which is you then help other people, right?
Yeah.
So... I mean, I like the steps because, you know, it's all about coming to realization of
a lot of people of don't weaknesses. Understand. There's a difference between recovery and sobriety.
What's the difference there?
You can be sober. People can be sober for a very long time and not ever truly recover.
Okay.
The whole point of recovery is to figure out why I chose that addiction in the first place, right? Whatever the addiction is, if it's drugs, whether it's alcohol or if it's pornography, why did I choose it? And we change that behavior. We change that part of us. And we give it to God. For addicts, belief in a higher power is essential. It doesn't matter what kind of higher power you believe in. It's just that believing in that higher power is needed. It's got to be somebody bigger than yourself.
And what about if it's, for example, someone else using that? Do you think that would work, or does it have to be necessarily in a power?
In my experience and what I've seen, you need a power. You need a higher power. But, you know...
Why is that?
It's essential. I myself is human and fallible, right? I'm not perfect.
Yeah.
The God I believe in is perfect, and he's redeeming. He's loving. And he wants me to be happy. He does not want me to suffer in this life, right? I don't want to suffer in this life. So he, through his son, Jesus Christ, who I believe is our Savior, prepared us to be able to really, you know, not feel it anymore through the atonement. The atonement, that's really all these steps are. These 12 steps is just the atonement of Christ. You know, I went out on a mission and I taught the atonement and I baptized and I thought I knew what it was. Come 26, 27 years old, I've just barely learned what the atonement really is and how it really feels. It's incredible.
So what would you say you are? Are you in recovery or are you in sobriety?
I'm in recovery. Absolutely.
So when you say that, is there ever an end goal where you actually are finally cured, or is this just a forever thing?
Interesting. You know, that's an interesting point. You know, I don't hate having to live how I have to live. I'm at peace with my addiction, right? I'm a grateful addict. I'm happy I'm an addict. That's so weird to say, right?
Yeah.
That's just so weird to say. I'm just happy I'm an addict because I can feel again. And I wouldn't have been able to feel again without going through these recovery steps. If I'm sad and I'm depressed, I'm happy I feel that emotion now. Numbing is the worst thing I've ever done to me. Like, numbing emotions is just awful. I hate that feeling now. I hate it.
So then do you just plan on living this way of the 12-step program, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, how I start my day is there are dailies. I call them dailies. There's things that I have to do each day that are non-negotiable. So when I wake up in the morning, I say my morning prayer and I ask for 5 things I can do that day. 5 things. And I'm going to do those 5 things no matter what that happens that day.
Like, what do you mean? Like you're praying for a prompting?
I'm praying for a prompting.
Okay.
Sometimes I'm going to exercise. A lot of times I'm going to exercise. I'm going to read my scriptures. I'm going to wait for a prompting of someone who might need some help. I ask to be of service that day. Give me a chance to serve somebody. And, you know, I'll go about my day and I'll be living my day and I'll feel that prompting.
Yeah.
Like, hey, call this person. Okay. I'll call this person. And it's incredible of just living by that prompting of a lot of time the answers I get from the people I'm prompted to call is like, how'd you know to call me? I'm like, I had a feeling.
Yeah. Which reaffirms your faith, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a feeling I should call you. Talk.
And that is a beautiful thing to be going through. I've myself have gone through that where I pray and I look for opportunity and that's a great feeling. But it seems like you're then at the point where you love what you're doing, even though it's a time commitment, right? You got to put up.
It can be.
So I mean
once a week for the actual meetings is once a week from 7 to 8.
Yeah.
Your Pro Bowl.
So you're giving up time, but you're doing it because. Am I right in saying this? You're doing this because for you, it's worth it to give up that hour plus, helping people in order to feel how you're feeling now instead of going back to that addiction.
Yes.
What if you could break free from that and just be done? And just like no more, you lose your spirituality. Like it's not like you lose your spirituality.
Break free and be done completely.
Yeah. You just break. Like you're just a normal dude. Doesn't get addicted to it, or if you look at it occasionally, you just.
I wouldn't take it.
Why is that?
I wouldn't take it. I've grown so much from what I've learned that I don't want it anymore. I want to have this, this addiction, this struggle. I want it because it makes me a better person. It makes me, being me, want to be a better person, right?
Yeah.
It makes me want to help. It makes me want to serve. It makes me want to. I mean, I was in the dark for so long that it's ridiculous. And, people that I've talked to and people I've helped, I always tell them, like, talk to somebody. Talk to somebody else. Ask for help. Don't be like me and wait 18 years or such to just talk to somebody. That's where you get stuck.
Yeah.
I want to be that person that if someone comes to me with this problem and asks me and talks about that, I can give them an answer. And be like, yeah, I know what can help you. Let me show you what I did. Let me give you a story. Come to one meeting with me. Just one. You don't even have to say anything. And most people I describe it to, I say, come watch a bunch of people cry. Because it's just people being honest. It's people being raw about who they are. And no faces, no last names, just.
Yeah, just talking about it. And that's just, I find that interesting. Because I've gone to 12-step meetings before, and I used to think, oh, maybe I have an addiction because I do this or that. And then I realized I do have an addictive personality. Mm-hmm. But I personally don't have any, addictions. I mean, maybe other than social media from time to time, right? But, yeah. But, someone like me, if I choose to look at porn, I can look at porn and then just forget that I looked at it for, a week or two,
Yeah.
And just move on with my life. And, but I felt like when I was a LDS member, being a very active LDS member, the thought consumed me so much of I screwed up. I felt like I made it a bigger deal than it was. Right. But it wasn't that way. So from your perspective, when would you recommend to somebody, go get help?
The moment you notice it's a problem, you notice that you can't do anything else without doing that first. If you can't function throughout your day without doing it, if it's on your mind that I need to do this,
mm-hmm.
you're growing a dependency to it. It's like any drug. I'm the same way with painkillers, right? I can't be around painkillers. I can't take painkillers.
Yeah.
Even being in chronic pain for, 10 plus years now, I can't take them.
Could you abuse it?
Yeah, I would. Absolutely. I'd abuse the crap out of it. But also because, I don't like how it makes me feel.
Yeah.
I don't like how I feel anymore.
So, walk us through this step real quick.
Yeah.
I know you called them out. You named them. But let's go over this real quick, because for me, as far as this episode goes, I feel like you've answered some of the questions I have, and I hope people listening to this, if they find themselves in need of help, they'll go after it, you know?
Yeah.
And do it rather than wait forever and let it keep compounding. And
yeah, don't be stupid like me. Trust me. It's not worth it.
Yeah, especially because now I'm assuming now you feel confident.
Oh yeah, I might feel a little too confident, honestly, sometimes.
Yeah, do you go on dates?
Oh, I have no problem asking anybody out on a date.
Oh, that's good.
No problem.
But before you did, right? Or no?
No shame.
What about before?
Before? Oh yeah, I always always worry, like, am I good looking enough or any of that?
Yeah.
No. I mean, if you don't want me, that's okay. I get it.
Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. So, yeah, let's go over this real quick. So, first step is admit that you of yourself are powerless to overcome your addictions and that your life has become unmanageable.
Yep. Honesty.
Okay.
It's all about being honest in every aspect of your life, right?
Yeah.
Being honest.
When step two, come to believe that the power of God can restore you to complete spiritual health.
Yeah. There's hope at the end of the tunnel, right? This isn't the end. You do not have to feel this shame, this guilt.
But see, so step two, though, would imply that you would eventually be done with it, right?
I really don't have the desire to use much.
Yeah.
It's not there anymore.
But I mean, yeah. Do you think, though, if you went back to it, you would break all the way back in? Or do you think now it would be manageable?
I want to say it would be manageable, but I know me. I would probably break and keep going back into it.
Okay.
But that's just me. You know, every addict is different. Every person's different.
And step three, decide to turn your life, your will, and your life over to the care of God, the Eternal Father, and His Son, Jesus Christ.
So the first two steps, God gives us, like, his mercy, right? He shows us, hey, this is what you're going to... Step three is all about the one thing He asks in return.
Okay.
Our will.
How do you do that though? How do you turn your will? How do you realize what God's will is?
It's not God's will, it's your will, right? The only thing that God has given us the only thing that we can give God that He hasn't already given us is our free will. I sat down and said a prayer, and it was probably one of the toughest prayers I've had to do. Or it was, you know, here's my will. Take it. And what does God do with our will? That's the interesting thing. What does He do? He gives it right back. Because God would never take away our free will.
So then what does that step mean?
It's the symbolic of being able to trust Him, right?
Yeah.
I trust somebody enough, I'm going to give them everything. Right? I can name probably about 15 different people right now that I could go to and say, hey, I need your help. And I trust that you can help me out with this. And they would be like, yeah.
So that's what it means. It's like, put your trust that God is going to help you through it.
Yes. You have to trust Him. You got to stop seeing God. I used to always think like God was kind of like the distant stepfather. You know, He was there. He loved you. You know?
Yeah.
Didn't really feel it. I feel His love all the time.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, that's an interesting take on step three. I'd never heard of that before. Then step four is you make an inventory of yourself.
Freaking crap, man. That thing was... Yeah, you do.
So what, you just...
You say a prayer, you write an inventory out.
You write out everything bad you've ever...
You list your resentments and your fears and your wrongs.
Yeah, I'm never going to do that. I have too many. So many skeletons. I'll call
it the rest. That's what we always say to list. I always have my guys, you know, that I help list their things they like about themselves too.
If I bring out my skeletons, they're going to call it the new resurrection, bro. They're going to think I brought back all of humanity.
Jay. I'd welcome your skeletons.
Yeah, no, some of them are hot, so. then it says admit to yourself. So then five is confession. right?
Confession, yep.
So then you tell people, you share with someone else.
Yep. That was my mentor.
You just tell him, look, this is all the things I did.
I sat down with him with my list that I had written out, and we went through each one.
Damn.
Every single one. And by the end of it, he knew me better than most people.
And then what do you mean by, what does it mean by be ready to have God remove your weaknesses? How do you become ready?
Step six, man. Change of heart. It took me forever. You know, it was more of a question of God's question, are you going to let me do this? And my answer to that for the longest time was no. I couldn't let go until, you know, one day I was in a meeting and that question hit again. And it came to me and I was just like, yeah, yeah, that sounds great.
You know, I don't know if you've ever read The Great Divorce by C.S. Lewis.
I have it.
It's a good book, but there's a part in it where there's a chapter where this guy, so the whole book's about, you know, these people get to take a bus up to heaven, and they don't have bodies though, so they can go around and look around what's in heaven, but because they don't have bodies, everything they touch hurts them, right? Because it's like if they walk on grass, it's like glass cutting into their feet.
Interesting. Okay.
Anyways, these people are out walking. This one guy's out walking, and he loves it. He wants to stay, and he has a lizard on his shoulder. And the lizard is like it represents his sin, right? So an angel shows up to him, and he says, "Look, you like this place?" And he says, "Yeah, I do." He says, "Well, you can stay here if you like. All you got to do is remove that lizard off your shoulder." And the guy says, okay, yeah, that sounds like a good deal, right? And so, you know, the angel then goes towards the lizard, and the lizard starts screaming. So the guy says, no, stop. Is there another way we can do this? You know, and he says, no. So he starts going at it again. The guy starts screaming, and he's like, stop. And he said, can you just take it when I'm not looking or something? And he's like, no. You got to be willing to let me take it off of you. And so the angel does, and eventually, you know, the guy lets him, and the angel removes it, and it burns him. It burns his skin to remove that lizard. And then he throws that lizard, and the lizard becomes a horse, and he rides the horse into the mountains, into heaven. So it just symbolizes that his sin became his
greatest power.
His greatest power, which I guess in your case, it's like that, right?
Yeah. It's all of those weaknesses, that fear, that those resentments that I had. I gave them up.
So step six is preparing yourself to remove it. Step seven is letting God remove it.
Yep. Step seven is going to God and be like, all right, I'm ready.
Interesting mindset there.
I'm ready. Let's do this. And that, you know, step seven is different for every person who does it.
Yeah.
For me, I was triggered with every single trigger that I had. I was triggered again. Every little emotional or, you know, physical or any of that kind of trigger that I had,
yeah,
it happened again. And this time, my mind didn't go to, oh, I need to use right now. My mind would just go to, this sucks. Like, this is a bad situation, man. And it wasn't until after the fact when I looked back at it, I'm like, not one time did I want to use through that.
Even though it's bringing you a lot of the similar feelings.
Oh, yeah. You know, it was the exact same feelings. And I didn't want to use anymore.
That's interesting.
That's really where the, you know, the true healing of yourself comes in step seven.
Yeah.
Step eight is time to make a list of all the people you did wrong because of your addiction.
Yeah. Sure, I'm sure you owe some people for using their credit cards, right?
No, actually. No, there was definitely people on my list.
Yeah.
Right. One of them was me.
That's interesting. Yeah, I guess you're right. You did yourself wrong for.
I need to forgive myself for everything.
And how's that work? I mean, did you have people being like, well, F you, Kip?
So, you know, my list wasn't this big. And that's where step nine comes in, right? Step nine is the reconciliation and restitutions.
Yeah.
So you make the list in step eight and step nine is when this happens. My step nine's still going on.
Yeah.
There's still someone on there that I am waiting for the right time. And God will let me know when that time is and where I can apologize.
So you don't have to apologize to everybody before you move on to the next step.
No. Nine can take, you know, it can take a lifetime.
Okay.
You don't know.
Yeah.
I'm in this period of like when it happens, this person I dreaded the most seeing.
Yeah.
I don't dread that anymore. Because now when I see this person, it's not going to be an issue. And I will be able to say what I need to say. And then take whatever is said to me.
Yeah. I think we all have that one person in our lives that we're just like, damn. Yeah. I'd rather avoid them.
Yep. So that's the relief of me is that I don't have to, you know, I don't have to seek this person out. I'm trusting that there will be a time that I trust in God that I'll be presented in the path of this person.
Mm. Then step 10 is you continue to take personal inventory.
So 10, 11, 12 are known as maintenance steps.
Mm.
They're your dailies that keep you going. And 10. Daily accountability. At the end of the day, I take an inventory of my day.
Yeah.
How'd it go? Did I get pissed off at anything? It was literally everything that I had talked to with my sponsor every day of calling him, except for this time I was doing it with God. So, hey, here's my day. And then it also says, if you're wrong, promptly admit it.
Yeah.
So another just step of being honest, staying honest every day.
Step 11 is seek through prayer, meditation of the Lord's will. Right? And that's what you said, right? Looking for service, looking for...
Yep, in the morning.
And then step 12 is have a spiritual awakening.
Now having a spiritual awakening of the atonement of Jesus Christ, spread this message.
Which is what you're doing right now.
Yep. Help people that...
Yeah.
Help people get the help that I got.
Well, I appreciate that, Kip, and I appreciate you coming on. Sure, I've had people reach out to me that said they have issues with pornography.
Give them my number, have them call me.
That's yeah. all I say. And maybe, you know, yeah, if somebody somebody listens to this, you can always reach out to me in order to find me, and I could connect you with Kip because, you know, it's interesting. There's people that we would never expect to have an issue with things, right?
No, never.
I remember going to one of those 12-step meetings once, and I think I ended up going to a porn one. I was just trying to go to like a normal 12-step one, but it was like, I was surprised by the amount of women the group. Yeah. But yeah, I appreciate you. Is there anything you'd like to tell the people that may be listening to this?
I know where you're at. I know that pit sucks. I know how hard it is. And you get the strength to get out, take it. Talk to somebody. You know, there was a conference talk a couple years back that said, Elder Uchtdorf said, don't hide things from your family. And it was just purely because nothing you do won't make them stop loving you. I say start with your family. Because after I did that, I felt so good that I told them. And, they didn't look down at me on anything. None of it. Not once. In fact, like, I felt more love and support from them than ever. It's a lie that if you tell people, it's going to get worse. It is a lie. Simple and true. It's a lie we tell ourselves. Or, you know, it's a lie the adversary would use is what I would explain it.
Well, isn't that the first sin? Is that Adam and Eve hid?
Yeah. Adam and Eve hid from God.
Don't hide. That's what they want us to do. Well, but I love each and all of you. I hope you enjoy this. I hope it helps somebody.
Well, I appreciate you, Kip. I hope you have a great day, and thank you for this.
Jay, the man. Call me anytime.
I will. Thank you. Take care.
Yeah, take care.
Bye.